Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, helping families love their homes again. Inspiration at callmosby.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Tuesday, November 18th. I'm Abby Larico. St. Louis Sheriff Alfred Montgomery heads to court this week in a case that could determine whether he keeps his job. The Attorney General argues his temporary removal should be permanent.
The sheriff has maintained his innocence, but this trial has been long coming.
St. Louis Public Radio's Brian Munoz breaks down the removal effort ahead of this morning's trial. Plus, the city of Ferguson has been under a consent decree for almost 10 years to reform its police, municipal code, and courts. The city's consent decree coordinator says her goal is to make sure reforms become deeply embedded in Ferguson's identity.
Instead of negative thinking toward the consent decree, we have embraced it as the performance management tool that it is, and that it's in our culture, it's in our DNA.
Consent decree coordinator Patricia Washington sat down with St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis to talk about the city's road to compliance. Those conversations coming up after this news on The Gateway. St. Louis Mayor Kara Spencer has named the city's new Commissioner of Emergency Management. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Lippman has more on the pick.
Greg Favor has been the director of the St. Louis Region's Disaster Response Collaborative and a deputy director of public safety for the state of Missouri. He has a master's degree in emergency management from the George Washington University. As a St. Louis Fire Department captain, he was in charge of major special events like presidential visits. The City Emergency Management Agency has been in the spotlight since the May 16th tornado, when outdoor warning sirens did not sound. The agency's former head was fired after an outside report found multiple failures that went beyond the fact staff was not in the office on the day of the storm. Favor calls his appointment an honor. He's expected to start around Christmas. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
Many St. Louisans are still grappling with recovery efforts, roughly 6 months after the tornado hit the region. The home of 13-year-old Dylan Nolans and her family sustained major damage, including to the roof. Nolan says even though she and her family were uprooted from their North St. Louis home, she says the community stepped up.
I was devastated that our house was gone, but we have a lot of friends. And as soon as the house was destroyed, one of our friends just volunteered like a house, a tiny little house to us. And we got to stay there for 2 weeks.
Their roof has been replaced, but repairs are still underway. Nolan's was a guest on St. Louis on the Air. Missouri Republicans played a major role in having the state's St. Louis-based 1st Congressional District include a majority African-American population. But a new filing from the Republican Attorney General now claims that district could be unlawful, as St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum reports.
Republican Attorney General Catherine Hanaway's office is arguing to a Cole County judge that a new congressional map is valid because the old map featured a plurality African-American 1st Congressional District that could violate the U.S. Constitution. Former Missouri Supreme Court Judge Michael Wolff says that contention is notable since Missouri Republicans have long supported a majority-minority 1st District.
Basically, it was done for the benefit of the Republicans by stuffing all the Democrats in CD1. It wasn't racial at all.
Wolf says Hanaway's contention makes little sense since the new map's 1st District would almost certainly elect an African American in a general election. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Congressman Wesley Bell currently represents the 1st Congressional District. He said the argument from Hanaway's office is insulting. Hanaway's office did not return requests for comment about the legal filing that defends Missouri's new congressional map. Missouri is second on the list in a new study that shows a state's gun ownership rate increases homicide rates among pregnant women. Researchers from Harvard Medical School and Boston Children's Hospital analyzed data from 2018 through 2021. Overall, researchers found the firearm homicide rate for pregnant women was 37% higher than that of non-pregnant women. And for every 1% increase in a state's level of firearm ownership, there was a 6% increase in homicides in pregnant women. Missouri is only behind Louisiana. Illinois is 25th on the list. After a week of criticism over his vote on a measure ending the government shutdown, U.S. Senator for Illinois Dick Durbin maintains it was the right decision. Alex Degman reports.
Durbin was one of seven Senate Democrats who okayed a continuing resolution that will fund much of the government through January 30th. Durbin says Democrats tried to get Republicans to negotiate, and it didn't work.
Part of the reason it didn't work is Donald Trump could give a damn if he has to cut SNAP benefits. He just doesn't care, and I don't think he'll ever reach a point where he will. On a congressional level, they were backing him up. So it looked to me like we, at this point, were running the very real risk that we wouldn't reach our goal and a lot of innocent people would suffer.
Democrats had been holding out for an extension of health care subsidies, but instead got promised a vote would be held on the matter by mid-December. I'm Alex Dagman.
St. Louis Sheriff Alfred Montgomery is headed to trial this morning in a case that could determine whether he will be removed from office. It's the culmination of months of legal maneuvering by the Missouri Attorney General. Montgomery's attorneys maintain the sheriff's innocence. St. Louis Public Radio's Brian Munoz has been following the case, and he spoke with STLPR editor Jonathan All about the trial.
Brian, how exactly did we get here?
So this trial has been months in the making, and Sheriff Montgomery's problems seemingly started about a year ago when he was passing out letters to his predecessor's top brass saying, hey, you're going to be fired. We just don't align on our vision for this office. That was months before he was sworn in on January 1st. And since then, his office has been riddled in scandal, among them numerous lawsuits from deputies over unpaid time, a secret recording that showed that Alfred Montgomery made a deputy roll a pair of golden dice in order to keep his job. He ordered the handcuffing of an acting jail commissioner and has overall allegations of misuse of taxpayer dollars. The sheriff has maintained his innocence, but this trial has been long coming.
What can we expect will happen on the first day of the trial?
There will not be a jury in this trial. It's just going to be Circuit Judge Stephen R. Omer, and he's going to have to decide if the Missouri Attorney General has enough of a case to remove Alfred Montgomery from being St. Louis's sheriff permanently. The argument that the attorney general is making is that there's a slew of charges, and the sheriff is saying, you know, this is a witch hunt motivated by race and the hunt for political power.
You mentioned the attorney general. How does this trial fit into the larger effort the attorney general is doing to remove Sheriff Montgomery from office?
So the attorney general is contending that all of these issues amount to the sheriff here not doing the duty of his office and that he should immediately be removed. The attorney general's office has tried several times to get him removed, and this fourth time not too long ago actually stuck. They were able to convince Judge Omer that, hey, you can't run the sheriff's office while being incarcerated. So he has been temporarily removed from the office until the conclusion of this trial.
Who's leading the sheriff's office while Montgomery's in jail?
Former St. Louis Police Chief John Hayden was appointed as the interim sheriff. Montgomery's staff wanted Colonel Yosef Yasharala, the second in command to him. His attorney, David Mason, said there would be chaos if he wasn't appointed, but quickly rescinded his comment after the circuit judge appointed a three-person panel to make that decision.
The attorney general recently added another charge against Montgomery. So what happened there?
Earlier this month, Attorney General Catherine Hanaway filed a seventh charge against the sheriff, going off of the ruling that Judge Omer had earlier in the month, and essentially amounting to the argument that the sheriff doesn't have the devotion to the office, that he's not able to devote time to execute the functions of the sheriff's position while in jail. And it was enough that, as I mentioned, the judge decided, hey, you know, you have a point here, removed him temporarily. So the AG's office is trying to make that permanent.
There's been a lot of discussion about who would actually take over permanently if Montgomery is removed. What do we know about that right now?
This has been widely debated between the Board of Aldermen, Mayor Kara Spencer's office, and the Attorney General. If Montgomery is ultimately removed permanently, I would expect some kind of lawsuit to pop up to definitively say who will get the last word.
So if the sheriff survives this removal attempt, is he out of the woods?
Well, not exactly. Aside from this trial, which is solely to determine if Alfred Montgomery should remain as St. Louis's elected sheriff, he still has a federal misdemeanor for ordering the handcuffing of then-acting jail commissioner Tammy Ross and five federal felony charges for witness retaliation and tampering. Just because he may survive this case doesn't mean that those go away. The federal case is independent of this one and has a possibility of landing Sheriff Montgomery in jail for the long term.
St. Louis Public Radio's Brian Munoz and Chad Davis are covering the trial to oust St. Louis Sheriff Alfred Montgomery. Brian, thanks for your time.
You're very welcome.
Brian was speaking there with STLPR editor Jonathan All. The city of Ferguson remains under an agreement with the federal government to reform its policies, municipal courts, and police training. That consent decree came 2 years after then-Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson killed Mike Brown Jr. After nearly a decade of sporadic progress, Ferguson's consent decree coordinator says the city has made significant strides in recent years. St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis sat down with coordinator Patricia Washington to learn more about where things stand.
We had a strategic plan put together and then started just breaking everything off by those categories. What needs to be done in courts? We have an amazing courts administrator. Michelle Richmond is phenomenal. She and her team have courts in 99% compliance. And that's everything from rewriting policies to how people pay for their court fees and fines, right? We took a look at each area and devised a strategy for coming into compliance in each of those areas.
What are some of those roadblocks that you all have sometimes?
One of the biggest things that we're facing in the police department is just staffing. The biggest component of the consent decree for the police department really is around training and community policing. Training is very, very difficult when you don't have a full contingent of officers, right? If you want officers to come in and do a half day or a full day training or a 3 day training, somebody's got to still patrol the streets.
So specifically with the police department, how have these trainings gone and what's still left?
Some of it is one time training. Some of it is annual training. And so, again, being able to put together that annual training plan so that our officers know this is the training that is coming up. But the biggest thing is changing the culture about training, thinking about training, not so that it's not a punishment, but it really is to make you sharper, to make you better. And we're seeing a lot of that. We just finished our scenario-based trainings around use of force this past week. And that is all inline learning. I mean, they are there all day. And it, as soon as you see something in a scenario, maybe there's a skit or something, you stop right there. And you course correct.
One of the things that I keep hearing from you and the judge and others is that progress is finally being made when it comes to compliance with the consent decree. So, you know, why did it take a long time for the momentum to ramp up?
But I think the biggest thing was just there was just this refusal to accept that we have to do this, you know, and that was across the board. Whether it was council members, members of the community, people responsible for it. So even though people were working very, very hard to get things done, there's still that pervasive attitude about a reluctance to embrace it and see it as a positive tool, which it is.
In June, the Ferguson City Council voted 4-3 to cut consent decree funding by half for this fiscal year. What would be cut with this decision?
Some of the got the legal guidance. I'd be very afraid about that. When I need to call one of our attorneys because there's an issue or something that we're proposing or we don't know how to come into compliance and need their advice, I'd be worried that we weren't going to be able to get that.
What does success look like for you?
Instead of negative thinking toward the consent decree, we have embraced it as the performance management tool that it is. And that it's in our culture, it's in our DNA, and that across the board, whether it's in municipal court reform, whether it's in community policing, or just our day-to-day governance, everything that the consent decree is and everything that we want to get out of that in terms of how we want to be as a community is not because we have to. It is being done because it's who we are.
That was Consent Decree Coordinator Patricia Washington talking with St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis, where Jessica Rogan edited that piece. To hear what other policies have changed, visit stlpr.org. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway.